Good afternoon. It's a piece of the action here on the day after the federal election. Fizzle out, that was. I blame the Labor Party myself, but we're not here to talk about that. What we're here to talk about is Julian Assange and his persecution by, well, various governments. We can pick and choose which ones that is. And I'm going to be talking to Helen Laurie and Phil Davies. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you.
And Phil.
Thanks, David.
Now, before we do that, though, we need to acknowledge, we should acknowledge, that we're on Kaurna land and that Kaurna sovereignty has never been extinguished or given up by the Kaurna people, and we respect the elders, past, present, and future, and the Kaurna people. That's a very important part of what we do. Helen Laurie and Phil Davies are with the Anti-Imperialists, a group which began in Adelaide in 2012 to raise public awareness about the war on Syria. This group came together as a response to the mass media coverage and the general amount of misinformation about this proxy war. As well as working to expose the truth about the Syrian situation, they have worked for years to support other social justice issues, including Aboriginal rights, Palestine, Timor-Leste, Bougainville, Cuba, and Venezuela. The group has always been supportive of Julian Assange, who, through WikiLeaks, has exposed many truths about the Syrian conflict, and in June last year they had a rally and campaign in Rundle Mall calling for the safe passage of Julian Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Now, of course, that didn't happen. He's now in the hands of the British in a maximum security jail where they normally keep terrorists. So the attitude of the British government is pretty clear. But we'll talk about his present circumstances a little bit later. Let's start by reminding people of the WikiLeaks revelations from Assange that exposed so many criminal acts by governments. So could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure, Stephen. There's been, as many of your listeners will be aware, there's been many, many thousands of revelations made through the server, the computer server that Julian set up, so that people could anonymously put information on there about corrupt activities of governments. And some of the ones that have been most in the media, in 2007, they released information about the US Army manual about the treatment of people on Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
And that was quite horrific revelations about the methods, the actual methods for interrogation and torture of those prisoners. Another one that made the mainstream media was the so-called collateral murder video, in which the US Apache helicopter was filmed killing civilians in Baghdad.
And we heard the dialogue, didn't we, of the American troops in the helicopters, which sounded just like a video game.
Yes.
Yet they were actually killing people who were basically civilians.
Yeah.
It was horrendous.
They were saying, light them up and keep shooting. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely appalling. And it was that video by which Chelsea Manning was accused of providing that information to WikiLeaks, and that's still ongoing with Chelsea, but we may come to that later, I suppose.
Yeah.
In 2010, there were other details released about US killings of thousands of civilians in both the Iraq and Afghan wars. The other thing that got a lot of the Americans upset was before the 2016 presidential election, the so-called Podesta files, where information from Hillary Clinton's private emails were exposed, plus a whole lot of other information that the Clinton clan had been involved in, including their links with Saudi Arabia and their gun running in Saudi Arabia to support wars in the Middle East. There's many other things. There's been 250,000 cables from U.S. embassies released, the so-called Cablegate files, and they were about the U.S. supporting the Saudi invasion of Yemen, Saudi support for attacks on Iraq. There's also been revelations about the CIA's involvement in hacking people's mobile phones all around the world, and the CIA involvement in social media. That's the so-called Vault 7 revelations. And one of the things that got us involved early on with Julian was the US, the revelations about the US NATO troops operating in Syria. We'd already had information about this, but the information from WikiLeaks confirmed what we knew via other sources.
Yeah, yeah. So we're getting information about that kind of thing in other places as well. I mean, the revelation that British troops were fighting in Yemen, obviously on the side of the Saudis, you know, special forces. And we know that the Americans have more than half their special forces in Africa now in various countries. And, of course, it's practically off the news. So the big point is this is stuff that we may not have learned about anywhere else through this process of Julian Assange and possible whistleblowers passing on information, obviously, like Chelsea Manning, which, as you said, we'll talk about later. We'll also talk about the Clinton ones, because I think that's particularly important, both in terms of the way the so-called liberal left treat Julian Assange and the way and the importance of the content itself, what it says about the Democrat Party and that's mainstream in the US. But we'll get back to that. Especially, I think it's also worth mentioning that, of course, Donald Trump welcomed WikiLeaks giving that information out now.
Yes.
He's not quite as welcoming now.
No, it's not his style now. But on the collateral murder video, actually, I just wanted to add that, you know, the Apache helicopters, they shot down the civilians and the journalists, and then there was a journalist struggling along the side of the road. Someone stopped to help that journalist in a van. He had his children in the van, and they shot at them as well. Yeah. And then a US soldier later on the ground said, "Oh, the only unusual thing about this whole event was the fact that it's been recorded and released, because it's actually business as usual." I mean, that's quite a usual thing to happen. So that is another reason, as you said, to be able to reveal the fact that this is normal behaviour.
Yeah. Well, so I've heard numerous times of that process of killing people, whether civilians or insurgents or whatever, and then waiting and shooting up ambulances or anyone else trying to help. And that seems to be common practice in certainly the US Army and probably other major armies too. But it's an indication of what war means these days for civilians, which is really important.
It is.
So what do you, if you were to summarise what you think the primary reason for the persecution and the pursuit of Julian Assange, which has gone on for quite a long time, what would you say it was? What do you think is the core of it?
I think it's that power doesn't like to be challenged and liars don't like to be exposed.
Yeah.
There's... people have got a lot to lose when they're in power. There are governments, corporations and the military performing different things around the world and interfering, in the case of the US, in different countries. And they want their secrecy.
Yeah.
And that's they don't like the challenge. They don't want to be exposed. And they have to protect themselves no matter what, so that they fight. Then they've got the power to fight back, and they can nail a whistleblower. And this persecution is really, I feel, to tell anyone else who wants to hold that power to account, watch out, we're going to come after you.
Mm.
And we've got the power, we've got the money, we've got the connections, and we hold all these other countries are in our thrall, and they're all going to stick with us. So, you know, there's no these individuals are very courageous people. They're trying to give us a voice and a way of seeing the truth, and they are being really slain in front of our eyes, basically tortured.
Yes, the job, I suppose you'd say, of journalists who actually take their profession seriously, but then we have, I think, all grave doubts about that. Mm. We've had an election campaign which is exposed yet again in Australia, whatever you think about, whichever side you're on, that a newspaper proprietor who isn't even an Australian can have a significant effect on the election, or can certainly push one side overwhelmingly. His journalists, therefore, are not acting as journalists.
No.
They're acting as basically as propagandists.
Exactly, yes. I do question journalists in Australia when I look at, you know, we're looking at what's happening in Venezuela or what happened in Syria, or, you know, ABC journalists, for example, are they following their journalistic codes properly and actually really critically looking at and finding information that is the truth about those situations, or are they just accepting information which is a kind of Western-centric way of seeing the world from CNN and regurgitating stuff that we're being fed here? And it's a kind of a Western mindset that we don't, you know, we don't want to have challenged somehow.
Well, the phrase that I've heard used is that journalists are more and more stenographers. They simply repeat what a press release from a government in many cases a big company says without any direction themselves or without any investigation themselves. So investigative journalism, I mean, despite all the myths of things like the Watergate, is very rare. You know, they're not very courageous at all. They're not very brave, a lot of journalists.
Exactly.
And there are exceptions to that, and we probably read a lot of them because there are people now, and this is the good side of the internet, who do blogs that are, you know, the Caitlin Johnsons of the world, the Eva Bartlett. People around the world who do that sort of thing. But they are all saying that the Assange example is a very, very important one. And as you said, it's designed to shut people down.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, John Pilger, in an article I read about him, he said that a decade ago, the Ministry of Defence in London produced a secret document which described the principal threats to public order as threefold: terrorists, Russian spies, and investigative journalists.
Yeah.
Mm. And the latter, the investigative journalists, they were designated as the major threat.
Yes.
So yes, we don't want to know the truth, really.
No, well, I mean, it exposes the lie of democracy in lots of ways.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned torture there. So you regard the treatment of Julian Assange latterly by the Ecuadorians and now by the British as torture?
Absolutely. It's not only us that believes that. The UN Working Party on Arbitrary Detention also believes it's torture. So I think there's, you know, independent world groups that believe it is torture.
And that's because of the, particularly the being held in solitary confinement for so long.
Yeah, and not only that, he's being held in solitary confinement basically for jumping bail. I mean, that's enormous overkill. He's been held on his own in a dark prison cell. He's an unwell man. He has committed no crime in Australian law. His only crime is skipping bail. And this is enormous overreach, and he shouldn't be in prison at all. He actually should be given safe passage back to his home and family in Australia.
Yeah.
But I can't see that happening with the way things are at the moment.
Well, he's not getting any help from the Australian government, so we'll talk about that in a bit later. So the situation in Ecuador, of course, happened because the Ecuadorian government changed, and basically the current Ecuadorian government is accepting large-scale bribes from the United States in order to change their attitude.
Yes.
What was it? They got several $1 billion in a was it a loan? I can't remember exactly.
Well, it's sort of offers to shore up their debt and beef up their military, isn't it, in exchange for Julian Assange, and it's matters to do with the Chevron company's behaviour in Ecuador. Let that pass, and we'll do these things. So Julian is a bargaining chip there, I guess.
And this is by the president called Lenin Moreno.
But, you know, at the end of his time there, that was a kind of torture too. He'd been in this place for more than 6 years, and then he wasn't allowed to have any visitors, only his lawyers, no friends, no medical attention, and he's really unwell physically and mentally. I mean, that's a huge pressure on a person all that time. They cut off his internet, so he had no outside contact with anyone. So that is a form of solitary confinement in itself. So he's had that for a long time. He was looked after by the Ecuadorian embassy to begin with. I guess they gave him that place, of course. But the last little bit since Moreno has been a form of torture, and then they've handed him over, and he's now once again in solitary confinement.
Well, it's also very important to point out that for years the critics of Julian Assange said that the idea that he was going to be, or the Americans were trying to extradite him, was poo-pooed and said to be just conspiracy theorists. And, of course, that was all blown away. As soon as he was into British jail, the Americans put in their extradition, and those people were silent about what they'd said before because it served its purpose in the past. So the American extradition request is in there. The other thing, of course, that's happening is that yet again the Swedish accusations have been raised.
Yes.
I assume you would regard the Swedish accusations as primarily political in their nature rather than criminal.
Absolutely.
And spurious too.
Yes. I mean, they have been disproved. They've been dropped. The charges have been dropped once. The women involved have reneged on that. And, I mean, it seems to me that they're being reignited for some reason that maybe that Sweden is more likely to extradite to the USA so that they could get him to Sweden, go through that process. He's not convicted, but they've got him there and then they can extradite him.
Yeah.
I'm sure that is the way.
But I suppose it also smears his reputation
as well. Of
course.
I mean, once you throw mud sticks. We know that. That's a tactic that happens all over the world all the time. You throw the mud. Even when it's cleaned off, the stain remains. And we ran a campaign in Rundle Mall for several weeks last year after a major rally, and lots of people say, oh, he's a rapist. And this is the thing that's uppermost in their mind, because that is what has been
pounded into them,
absolutely brainwashed. They're brainwashed with it. And even when you talk to them and you try and reason and say, look, that's been dropped, those charges have been dropped, blah, blah, the people don't accept that. They just go with that first accusation, and it's hard to get rid of it.
And we should perhaps point out that the Swedish Social Democrats are a pretty conservative bunch, really, for being calling themselves Social Democrats, and they've been collaborating with the Americans for years. This is the prosecutor in this case, who seems to be the main mover and shaker, is very much associated with the Christian Democratic Party. And so the political nature of it is fairly easy to expose if you actually go into it.
Yes, I agree.
So let's get to the Clintons, because I think this is really important. You pointed out that the links of the Clintons to Saudi Arabia, and particularly the Clinton Foundation, which, among other things, meant that a lot of the election work or campaigning of the Clintons was paid for by Saudi Arabia, effectively, because neither of them, although both of them were fairly wealthy, they pale in comparison to the Saudi riches. And so that was something that they really wanted to keep quiet and not have much attention on. So we've had instead of the last few years have been talking about the Democrats in general, and the Clintons in particular, having links to Saudi Arabia, we've had in America this massive obsession with so-called Russian interference in the elections, which has been exposed and exploded over and over again, but it's been where the so-called liberal left press has been focusing. A lot of it seems to be about covering up for the Clintons.
Well, I think you're spot on. That's exactly right. And they're highly embarrassed by that. They're highly embarrassed by their connections with wars. They propose that they're seekers of justice, leaders of the free world, and yet they've been exposed to be connected to fighting foreign wars, connected with some of the most vile aggressors in the world, and that's highly embarrassing.
Yes, a barbarous regime in Saudi Arabia, as I've talked about on this show about Yemen. People focus on the Khashoggi thing, but I mean that's just one person. Barbarous though it was, the starvation of millions of people in Yemen is more to it. But also, I suppose you could talk about the Saudi regime and Bin Salman is jailing and torturing his own family.
Yes.
privileged people, yes, but that's the sort of ruthless attitude of the powermakers.
We've been selling arms to Saudi Arabia. Australia's been kind of linked there as well. We would say that Al-Assad is no good in Syria, but yet we'll support the Saudi regime, and that's an incredible hypocrisy that's going on that I see. And Hillary Clinton herself is probably mostly very responsible for the war in Libya and showed her very ugliest side at the death of Gaddafi in her gloating over that. And then we have to remember
the quote was, We saw, and he died.
Yes.
When he was actually sodomized by a knife by fundamentalist Muslim insurgents.
It was a truly horrific moment, and she was really enjoying it to the maximum. Mm. And Bill Clinton also, we should remember, killed 1 million Iraqi children under the age of 5 in the 90s because of his genocidal sanctions.
Yeah.
So there are... Are those people ever taken to account, called to account for their war crimes, for all the deaths, the murder? What's Julian Assange got on his hands compared with all of that?
Yeah, well, my sister and I were trying very hard during the American election to point out to people, look, you're talking about this as if Trump is the biggest warmonger. Well, he's not. I mean, he's no peacemaker, but he's... The Clintons are more experienced and have more links and are bigger warmongers than him. Yeah. And they've got the same links to the neocons. The neocons in America, who are the biggest promoters of war, people like Bolton and so forth, were also connected to the Democrats and the Clintons and still are. It's not a matter of choice about war in the U.S. It's which leadership is more warmongering,
Yes.
And that's the sort of thing that those who are a bit shallow about thinking about war and peace in the world, and who think that, because Hillary Clinton is probably socially a bit more liberal than Trump, they're willing to ignore or forgive the warmongering. It's just extraordinary, the double standards in that respect.
Yeah, we find that as well.
Unfortunately, in too many people who call themselves leftists are, they focus on social issues and they focus on the unproven allegations and, in fact, pretty clear withdrawn allegations of rape against Julian Assange, although even that is a technicality in the Swedish... way of doing these things, and they don't focus on the content of what's being revealed. They get obsessed by other issues. They also think in simplistic electoral terms. Trump is further right, supposedly, on domestic issues than the Clintons, although there's plenty to be said about what the Clintons did when Bill Clinton was in power domestically. The fact that the great increase in African American incarceration happened under the Clintons, and then, you know, it's kept up since, and the massive cuts in welfare was very much the Blairian third way politics, the Tony Blair. But nevertheless, they're supposedly to the left of Trump, so that's all right, and we shouldn't. If you expose their crimes or their connections, then you're simply helping Trump. It's just, it's a very narrow way of thinking about things.
It is. It seems to me that, you know, left, right, whatever, you need to bring a critical mind to whatever's happening, and we seem to be facing a time where, like we were told about the Arab Spring, look at this, great things are happening in the Middle East, and it's rolling on from country to country and gaining momentum, and, you know, like any revolution is a good revolution to some people, without actually examining who's pushing that revolution, who's funding it, who's arming it, where is it coming from, what's the intention, and the inverted commas, the evil dictators that get pointed out and demonised, we seem to have a feeling that we are entitled to interfere as, I don't know what it is. Is it white supremacists or Western-centred people, or we just have the moral authority? Somehow we feel that we are right and we can impose our ideas, our freedom and democracy, as we call it, on other countries, interfere there, and we should be thanked for that.
Yeah.
And people are suffering, like in Yemen, as you say. The people of Syria have been going for 8 years, facing incredible privations, facing sanctions. That's another tactic, turn the people against their leader by stopping them from getting food, medications. And those Syrian people, I mean, the ISIS was stirred up there and exported there, really, and were beheading people and putting people in ovens and the most horrific, barbaric cruelty happening. And those Syrian people, they stood by their leader in spite of that, all of that happening, and they are amazing people of courage, I think, that even though they're suffering, and now at the end of that, even though Al-Assad was elected again there and he's withstood all of that undermining for all that time, they're now putting further sanctions. You know, we know people in Syria, the cars are just stopped in the streets because there's no petrol. There's no medical aid there. There's food shortages. It's just a cruel, you know, we can't bear it that he withstood us, so we're going to punish the people further. And as you were saying, civilians are now the target.
Yeah.
It's the women and children shopping in the marketplaces. They're the people that get bombed. I mean, if you want to bring freedom and democracy anywhere, why would you bomb all the infrastructure, burn all the grain, make all the public servants kill them? It just doesn't make... It doesn't add up.
Well, we should, given we're talking about revelations and the way in which governments suppress knowledge, we should talk about the latest information from Syria, the revelation that the OPCW, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Warfare, I think that's
chemical
the right.
Weapons.
Chemical weapons, okay. Yeah. It's been found out that they suppressed part of their report on the Douma chemical attack, which, if you remember, was the excuse for the Americans and the British to attack Syria with missiles. Basically, the revelation was that there's hardly any way that the chemical cylinders could have come from the sky. They were set off from the ground, which means they were set off by jihadis.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And people, the source of that, I think, Caitlin Johnson, is she the best source for that? I think there's an article that she did a few days ago.
Yes. Well, there are many sources, actually. We've known about this for years since it actually happened.
Yeah.
There's been information around from people on the ground and from many sources in the Middle East. If we have friends who read the Arabic news sources, and there's plenty of evidence that it couldn't have possibly been the Syrian army that had anything to do with it.
Mm.
And in fact, it doesn't even make sense. The Syrian army are actually looking after their people. They're heroes to their people. You see any of the videos online of the actual Syrian people with their army, they are heroes. They are worshipped. They are very courageous men and women who are trying to protect their country from imperialist forces, imperialist and terrorists supported by the imperialist forces. So, you know, we have known about that for a long time.
Yeah, but I mean, this latest one is the actual report from an inspector on the ground who told the LPCW that this was the case, but it's just been revealed now what his report was.
Yes.
But I haven't seen any of it, of course, in the mainstream media.
No.
None of that.
No, you wouldn't.
This is the old mud sticks scenario once again. You make the accusation, even if it's cleared, the stain remains, and that is always the case, and that's how that works, really.
Yeah. So that's the sort of role that Julian Assange has played and wanted to continue to play, and that other people will play as well, of raising the curtain on the dirty tricks of governments and agencies that are operating under the thumb of those governments.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because in Douma, it was the White Helmets, so-called. Mm. White Helmets who were supposedly helping the Syrian people. But it was a kind of a parallel universe going on there. No Syrian people ever knew what the White Helmets were doing. They were organised by an ex-army British soldier who was running a kind of a propaganda
film unit
on the side. Mm. Yes, and they're the ones that put where they saw, you know, the dust or the gas, and they said gas, and they were the ones that started that whole chemical weapons thing, you know, and so.
Well, they won a Hollywood award for their films.
Did.
And it was totally fictitious.
Well, they operated as a propaganda unit. And I know I've seen pictures of people who in one case were members of the White Helmets, then in other cases operating as jihadi soldiers or insurgents.
That's right.
So yes, it's pretty clear their connections.
Yes, they
can play two roles.
But all this sort of mudslinging, as you said, has had its effect in Australia.
Yeah.
Australian governments don't, they're both the major parties are wedded to the American alliance, so they wouldn't do much anyway. But that has helped make it easy for them to operate, give minimum support to Julian Assange, if any. I mean, are we aware of any support they've given to Julian Assange? Even the normal, that's what Scott Morrison said, he would supply the normal activity to an Australian citizen, but I don't even know if even that's happened.
I think there are some individual politicians who have spoken their support, not publicly, but privately for him, but I'm not aware.
I think
aware
they
of
had one visit from a consular member.
Yes.
Towards the end of last year, I think so. But I mean, it does say in the Australian passport, Australian consular services provide assistance to Australians who find themselves in difficulty.
Hmm.
I mean, if we can work very hard for Schapelle Corby, we can probably work hard for Julian Assange.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't. It's a different scenario, isn't it?
And so have any politicians in Australia been publicly supporting Assange? I can't remember that anyone has.
I think there are some.
I think there's been some statements by Scott Ludlam. Mild statements, and he's no longer a politician, but he is always concerned about security issues. But there's been very little, even from the Greens.
No.
You know? No, that's true. There are a few people. We do know Julian Assange's father, John Shipton, who's been going around with the lawyer, Greg Barnes, trying to talk to politicians wherever he can to try and garner some support, but it's quite difficult because people are fairly fearful, I think, of what's going on, and there's no will really to help him. And he's got a family here, and he, you know, it's quite inhuman what's happening. I mean, Julian Burnside has, we at our rally last year, we quoted, had some speeches from Julian Burnside, Terry Hicks and John Pilger, who are supporting Assange, and saying, you know, we can't remain silent or passive as the democratic principles we uphold are shredded. Assange has committed no crime. He's being persecuted because he's published leaks that exposed government acts that are criminal under the law.
Mm.
So who is the criminal?
Yeah. Yeah, yes. That's right. And in terms of the US, the whole Democrat revelations and the Clintons being embarrassed shut down most of the Democratic Party. I don't think there's been anything much from Bernie Sanders or Ocasio-Cortez. But there has been statements from Tulsi Gabbard. I think he's the only American politician that I'm aware of who's actually come out and said that, that
been
he,
good.
You know. And she seems to be the only genuine anti-war candidate in the whole American lead-up to the election.
That's
from
correct.
What I can see.
But the irony of all this is Julian's not an American citizen, so why are they concerned with him breaking American laws?
Yeah.
It's totally irrelevant. This is war on an individual.
Oh, well, this is that idea that American law is universal
exactly.
law.
Exactly. I mean, that's quite part of that idea that we are... or the Americans are the supreme leaders. Like she accused him of treason. Julian Assange is accused of treason, which, as I understand it, means you have to be a citizen of that country. So we do own, you know, they own the world. The USA owns the world, there's
the world's police.
Yeah, they are the world's police.
Yeah, and crimes against the US, which includes telling about what they've actually done, or even politicians have done, is. Is a crime against that global order.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, there's also just another example of that kind of left liberal attack on Julian. I gave you a copy of the Mackenzie Murray article in the Saturday paper from April, which was a pretty snarky, small-minded kind of an article, wasn't it? Because it really focused on personality and... little snarky hints rather than the politics of it and the information.
It was very disappointing from the Saturday paper because generally they're quite good and quite analytical and factual, but as you say, it was really a personal attack on Julian.
But I've heard the same thing from other outlets of that kind. I mean, we all know that The Guardian has it in for Julian because he embarrassed them. They first of all, you know, they had the disputes about the information that he released, but they have been pretty bad on Julian Assange ever since.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, character assassination has been one of the hallmarks, I think, because people accuse him of all kinds of things, including the judge that called him a narcissist, the UK judge. I mean, that says more about the judge than it does about Julian, I think, really. Is that a legal position?
Well,
he's a narcissist?
Members of the British establishment calling anyone a narcissist.
Questionable.
You know, they still think they're an empire.
Yes.
from someone originally from Ireland as me is part of the irony of the whole situation. The British still ponce around and prance around, including their judges, saying, you know, we're still, you know, the empire,
exactly.
Even though they haven't got anything left, practically.
No.
But there we go. That's that.
Well, can I just add that, Stephen, the media outlets have been very happy to support Julian, like the Washington Post and the New York Times, when they've published information that's come through WikiLeaks. And same with the British and Australian newspapers. There's been plenty of things published that have come from WikiLeaks. They've been great supporters of Julian.
Yeah.
And it's only, you know, so why the silence? Why don't they support him now?
They sell the newspapers and they enhance their reputation, but try and suppress the voice that actually gave it to them.
Yeah, and by the same token, I mean, WikiLeaks, Julian hasn't actually been accused of... stealing any of this information. He's just provided the platform for whistleblowers to contribute information. So as far as we know, Julian hasn't actually hacked into anything to get any of this information. It's come from other sources. He's provided the secure platform. And so, in fact, it's the major newspapers that have published the stuff that should be more culpable than him. He hasn't actually published it. He's provided it, sure, but why isn't the same level of outrage from government against the major newspapers that have published this material?
Of course, politics again. The way in which people are treated depends on how much power they've got and how much influence they've got and how much money they've got.
Exactly.
That's the reality of it. Mm. You talked about whistleblowers, and of course, one of the key people involved with WikiLeaks is Chelsea Manning. And Chelsea Manning has been jailed again, despite the fact that she was given a pardon by Obama. Mm-hmm. What's the charge again that she's currently under? Can you remember?
I'm not exactly sure what the charge is, but I think her response to it is
she's given
the information already.
Yes, I do remember. It was not being willing to testify before a grand jury, and that's a crime in the US. But as you said, she says she's already testified it.
Yeah.
What they're looking for, of course, is a way of saying that Julian Assange was directly involved in her getting data from the US military and other activities that she gave revelations about.
That's right.
And so that they can then, when and if they extradite him to the US, can charge him with that.
Yes, that's my understanding.
As well as whatever else nonsense they dream up. But Chelsea Manning is standing firm and saying, there's no way I'll talk to these people.
She's incredibly courageous, I think, and I believe that. I think she won't break, and she's a real hero.
Yeah, and you have to remember for people out there that this is someone who underwent transgender activity, if you like, while in prison, and pressed that and all the abuse that she would have received for that, and still went ahead with it. On top of that, kept this activity going. And the interesting thing was, why do you think she was released by Obama? Do you think it was about political embarrassment as much as anything? You know, the pardon?
It's hard to know what his motivations were. We were very, very glad that it happened, of course. But I'm not sure what the motive. It could have been political embarrassment. I mean, really, the crime and the punishment didn't match anyway, even if it was... I don't think the sentence should have been as long as it was in the first place anyway, so she should have been relieved.
Well, the point was that whatever she did exposed crimes which were far greater, even in objective terms, than anything she was supposed to have done.
Exactly.
But none of those crimes have been brought to any kind of resolution, have they?
There's been no
charging of American troops or war crimes, Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
It's all been, subsumed in the empire, and this is what the empire needs to do in order to protect itself effectively.
It's highly embarrassing for the leadership too, because she's a person of great principle, and she's standing up for her principle while the political leaders are just shown to be totally hollow and pragmatic and doing what they can to maintain power.
Yeah.
She's an embarrassment.
And she's very clear that the primary target they have is Julian Assange.
She is.
And that she is protecting him as he protected her.
Yes.
Because what he did do was help her to try and keep her own identity secret. That didn't happen. That was eventually revealed. But she is replaying his loyalty to her by her loyalty to him.
Yes.
And I think that's admirable in lots of ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess the $64,000 question is, what's next? What happens to Julian in the next few months? Do you know where the legal processes are in Britain? If we can give them the the respect of calling them legal processes.
Yeah. Look, to be honest, I'm not up to where what the legal situation is. I mean, I only know the principle is that he really should be brought back to Australia to be with his family, and he's committed no crime here, really, and he's an Australian citizen. The Australian government should really bring him back. And the question for me is why aren't they doing that?
Yeah.
And what are the things that are stopping them from looking after one of their citizens who's in trouble abroad, who has committed no crime?
Yeah. So what seems to be happening is that they're giving themselves two options, either extradition directly from Britain or if they can extradite him to Sweden and then extradite from Sweden to the US.
Yes.
But, I mean, both of those require this argument, as we said, that effectively says American law is universal law.
Yes.
I mean, how do you prove that someone is, committed crimes against the U.S. But without saying something that is extraordinary to what – there's kinds of things that Trump keeps on saying now, which is, saying our interests are override other things and other people around the world. And, maybe that's embarrassing in Britain. I don't know. Of course, the situation there is that Jeremy Corbyn has already said that if he becomes Prime Minister that he would release Julian Assange.
Yes.
I don't know whether what the prospects of that are. That if anyone got their head around the British politics of the last few months, they're doing better than me because it's completely nonsensical.
Yeah.
But we may end up very shortly with Boris Johnson as the Prime Minister of Britain, which is, I mean, Boris Johnson and Trump together, kind of like
the
clowns together.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
All the clowns.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Although, to say that, on the other hand, there seems to be some evidence that Trump is at least to some degree restraining the neocons from the attack on Iran, which they're now contemplating. It's just amazing it reminds me of a great beast that's been wounded and is thrashing so much that it's willing to destroy anything around it to delay or prevent its demise. Because, as I've said a number of times in this show, the American empire is in steep decline.
Yes.
And they're currently, the trade war with China is certainly hurting China, but it's going to hurt the United States a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Including the people who voted for Trump. So it's extraordinary the way politics work.
We're fortunate that China and Russia are so strong, really. I think that's the main thing that's holding up the US progress, and particularly, as you mentioned, with Iran, China and both Russia are united in supporting Iran and not allowing them to suffer the same fate as other countries in the Middle East.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that I talked about I did an interview here last week for The Wire about our protests in Yemen, and one of the things they talked about is, again, something that's hardly had any coverage in the West, is that the Americans are selling $80 billion worth of nuclear power plants to the Saudis, and all but the first three governments, the US, Soviet Union and Britain, who gained nuclear weaponry, got it through civilian nuclear power processes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very dangerous idea, that idea of helping the Saudis to get a nuclear bomb.
Yes, of course.
Because we know who it'll be aimed at.
Yeah.
if they get it. And, of course, the Iranians are going to build up their own nuclear program in response, because they can't be, they know how crazy the Saudi leadership is, and they may get invaded any time now. So we may have a renewed war. Although there is some evidence that there's a lot of bluster there involved.
But you do get the feeling though that we're on the cusp of very dangerous times. I mean, even a few years ago in the Syrian conflict, if they hadn't invited Russia in, Russia was invited into Syria, not unlike everyone else who went there, the US, France, England and Australia and Chechnya and all kinds of people from all over the globe. But Russia was invited there, and I think that their diplomacy and their stepping in there and helping really deflected the possibility of World War at that time. And, I mean, conflict sells weapons. This is a basic principle.
Yeah.
And it keeps certain economies turning. And in some ways, it's maybe it's even above countries. It's kind of corporations who are running those countries, who are selling their weapons, who are making a killing, literally, are bringing us to the brink of very dangerous times. And I just keep thinking we, as citizens of Australia, we need to wake up. That's how I feel. I feel that we're very much asleep and we're not thinking critically, asking the questions, challenging our leaders. We just want comfort of some kind and not to know.
Yeah,
that's how I feel that we behave.
I agree. That not only is there a general malaise, though, I think you were talking earlier about confusion on the left, Stephen, and I think one of the problems is, you know, there's confusion about, you know, what really is true democracy and what is actually capitalism, you know, and free market economy, which is reliant on the arms industry. And that's what often poses as democracy. And it's not. It's basically capitalism. And there's a lot of confusion about that.
Well, I'm going to be, through IPAN, South Australia, Independent Peace for Australia Network, organising some activity in relation to Raytheon, one of the biggest arms manufacturers in the world. I think but the second biggest after Lockheed Martin. And I've done some research on Raytheon before, but I put in a link into YouTube just yesterday to gather some more information. And it's extraordinary how many videos there are on them, about 90% of them put out by Raytheon themselves, promoting themselves and saying how good it would be and how good they are and being an employee of Raytheon. And things like, with no sense of irony about it, that they have a close partnership with the, of all people, the Girl Scouts of America, to train, you know, to encourage young women to become programmers with Raytheon, as of course they've got into schools in Australia.
They promote, you know? That's right.
So that's the sort of thing that is, a lot of it is behind these, the warmongering and so forth. We just hope it's not that it's great, the encouraging selling of arms, but of course it's one step better than having an actual war. But of course, arms manufacturers are quite happy for wars because it uses up their product and gets people to buy more of them.
That's right.
So that's not an impermeable barrier by any means. But that's the sort of thing that the Julian Assange of this world are heavily involved in. And we hope that WikiLeaks continues and that Julian Assange gets home to his family and gets out of the vice that the governments have put him in.
Yes, yeah. and that his treatment, the treatment of Julian, won't crush any other people who are trying to reveal the truth.
Well, I mean, interestingly, I think if you look back to what Chelsea Manning did when she was still in the American military, I don't think it would have stopped her because she had a pretty clear idea what was going to happen to her, but that she just didn't felt morally compelled to do it.
But right now the Australian government is trying to do the same thing to Witness K about the Timor-Leste. So, you know, there are whistleblowers who are on the mat, and that's going to be a trial held in secret when those people get tried, so...
Yes, another issue we've talked about in the show, that the behaviour of governments is totally immoral.